You. I'm Pickles, and let's start off the show right away with some world news. First off, the Malaysia Airlines plane has been missing for 4 weeks now. A crucial stage in the search began on Friday as two military ships, one from Australia and the other from Britain, directed their sensor technology beneath the surface of the water and began the underwater phase of the hunt, hoping to pick up signs of wreckage lying at the bottom of the Indian Ocean. The ships searched a single 150-mile-long track of the ocean floor, each starting from an opposite end and converging in the middle. Both vessels are equipped with listening devices that can hear any pings from the plane's flight data and cockpit voice recorders or black boxes. The two ships, the HMS Echo of the Royal Navy and the Ocean Shield of the Royal Australian Navy, were part of a deployment of 11 vessels involved in Friday's search, about 1,050 miles off Perth, Australia. The ships were joined by 10 military planes and 4 civilian jets, which conducted surveillance flights over the search zone throughout the day. The Ocean Shield is outfitted with a so-called towed pinger locator, a bat-wings-shaped device with a microphone that is towed below the vessel and can pick up any signals from Flight 370's black boxes. A lot of hope is riding on the effectiveness of the underwater listening devices, and on the estimates of the data from analysts that have designated the search zone as the most likely location of the plane's plunge into the ocean, which is now the most popular theory as to what has happened to the missing plane. The black box's batteries, which have a lifespan of about a month, are expected to expire next week. When they die, so will the pinger signal, leaving the boxes to rest mutely on the seabed and making their discovery far more difficult. Crews on the planes and other vessels continue to search for floating debris from the plane. If debris is found and confirmed, it might help searchers to determine the plane's point of entry into the ocean. But while search coordinators said there were some sightings of objects reported by ships on Friday, none of the items were linked to the missing plane. We'll continue the surface search for a good deal more time because if we find a piece of wreckage on the surface or some evidence on the surface that the aircraft went into the water nearby, that gives us a much better datum. That's from Air Chief Marshal Angus Houston, the Australian official overseeing the coordination of the search. He also said, instead of searching over an area the size of Ireland, we might be able to get into an area which is the size of the metropolitan area of Perth, for example. This was during a news conference in Perth. Mr. Houston said that there is still a great possibility that searchers might find debris from the plane floating on the ocean surface. On Thursday, the search zone was adjusted farther northward from the area where the searchers had been exploring for the last week. The modification was based on continuing groundbreaking and multidisciplinary technical analysis of satellite data and airplane performance. This is coming from where the plane last checked in and where they were last sighted. He added that there is nothing unusual about this. The search area will be adjusted on a semi-regular basis. And by unusual about this, he was of course talking about adjusting the search, not about the actual plane being missing, which is very unusual. The U.S. is reconsidering their talks in the Mideast peace talks, their role in that, I'm sorry. The Obama administration will reevaluate its role in foundering Middle East peace talks following actions by both Israel and the Palestinians that have brought the negotiations to virtual collapse. This is coming from the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry. A visibly downbeat Kerry, who has spent the better part of his 14th-month tenure as America's top diplomat, trying to cajole the parties into talks, stopped short of declaring the peace process dead. But in his most pessimistic assessment of the situation since talks began last summer with an end of April target for a deal, Kerry made clear his patience was near exhausted. He said it was time for a reality check. He went on, "It is regrettable that in the last few days, both sides have taken steps that are not helpful, and that's evident to everybody." Speaking to reporters in Rabat before traveling to Casablanca for a meeting with Morocco's king, Kerry said the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks could not continue to occupy so much of his time if the Israelis and Palestinians were unable to take even minor steps toward making the negotiations successful. He noted there were other pressing matters, such as the crisis in Ukraine and Syria, as well as the Iran nuclear talks that demand attention. He went on, "Clearly we have an enormous amount on the plate. There are limits to the amount of time and effort that the United States can spend if parties themselves are unable to take constructive steps. We are going to evaluate very carefully exactly where this is and where it might possibly be able to go. If only Kerry would say the same to our Congress." Kerry has been the lead player in the administration's effort to forge a long, elusive deal to end the conflict, and for the past 12 days had been conducting furious shuttle diplomacy to salvage the talks as the end of the month deadline loomed. With little, if any, tangible signs of progress over the course of 8 months of talks, the initial goal of a comprehensive deal was scaled down to an outline of what such an agreement would look like. If the talks do collapse, it would be a huge disappointment to Kerry and could be seen as a foreign policy failure for the administration. The Obama administration even took the unprecedented step of allowing the possible release of convicted American spy Jonathan Pollard, who was serving a life sentence for selling U.S. military secrets to Israel, to be used as an inducement to get Israel to release some Palestinian prisoners. Every president since Ronald Reagan has refused Israel's request to release Pollard, showing how dire this situation is. Over the past several weeks, the more modest goal of a framework accord was scaled down even further as Kerry and his team focused on getting the two sides to merely agree to extend the time frame for the talks. Just agree for the talks to go on longer. That aim was put into serious jeopardy when Israel over the weekend refused to release a group of Palestinian prisoners they had said they would free as part of the agreement to resume the talks. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said they say they want to continue, but we are not going to sit there indefinitely. This is not an open-ended effort. It's reality check time. After meeting Abbas last week in Jordan, Kerry flew to Israel from Paris on Monday to meet with Netanyahu in a last-ditch bid to keep the talks afloat. He then flew to Brussels to attend a NATO meeting on Ukraine on Tuesday, but planned to return to the Mideast on Wednesday to see Abbas again. The plan to go back to Israel was canceled when Abbas on Tuesday said that in retaliation for Israel refusing to release the prisoners, the Palestinians would seek greater international recognition by signing up to 15 UN treaties and conventions, something they had said they would not do while the negotiations were in progress. On Thursday, Israel officially canceled the prisoner release, throwing the entire peace talks process into doubt. The U.S. has supported statehood for the Palestinians, but has argued that they should accomplish this through the peace process rather than by unilateral actions. Kerry said he would return to the U.S. on Friday and consult with President Barack Obama and other top national security advisors on how to proceed. But his comments on Friday signaled that he and his team would be taking a step back from the peace process to test Israeli and Palestinian intentions. Abbas and Netanyahu must lead to make difficult compromises for the talks to have a chance for success. "The leaders have to make these decisions," said Kerry. "Let's keep all our wishes hoping for peace in the Mideast, as it would start a new era for the world." And now we're going to take a little break for some music, and here's "Oh Sweet Nothing" from the Velvet Underground.
Say what? not the shirt right off his back. He ain't got nothing at all. And say a word for Ginger Brown. Walks with his head down to the ground. Took the shoes right off.
DU Did You Know? Brought to you by Penguin Radio. DU Did You Know? Legend has it that Penafort Residence Hall is home to a ghost. A friendly ghost, that is. The ghost was a janitor at Dominican back when the school was girls only. The janitor would patrol the halls at night, watching over the girls. He would jingle his keys as he went to let them know that he was there protecting them. Penafort residents say that late at night, they can still hear him jingling his keys. DU Did You Know? Brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back to The More You Know. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. This is Penguin Radio, and I am your host, Pickles. Next up, we just talked about some world news, and now we're going to go on and talk about the U.S. First off, U.S. employers add 192,000 jobs, but the rate stays at 6.7%. U.S. employers added jobs at a solid pace in March and hired more in January and February than previously thought. Friday's government report sent a reassuring signal that the economy withstood a harsh winter that had slowed growth. The economy gained 192,000 jobs in March, and the Labor Department said Friday that It was slightly below February's revised total of 197,000. Employers added a combined 37,000 more jobs in January and February than previously estimated. The unemployment rate was unchanged at 6.7%, although. But 500,000 Americans started looking for work last month, and most of them found jobs. The increase in job seekers is a sign that they were more optimistic about their prospects. We're back to where we were before the weather got bad, said John Canale, economist at LPL Financial. It's a nice, even report that suggests the labor market is expanding. March's job gain nearly matched last year's average monthly total, suggesting that the job market has mostly recovered from the previous month's severe winter weather. Stock futures rose modestly on the news, and the yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to a 2.77% from 2.8% last Thursday. The March report included one milestone. More than 6 years after the Great Recession began, private employers have finally regained all the jobs lost to the recession. Go America. The employees shed 8.8 million jobs in the downturn. They've since hired 8.9 million. Still, the population has grown over that time, leaving the unemployment rate elevated. The proportion of Americans in the labor force, that's those who are either working or seeking work, has rebounded this year after steady declines since the recession officially ended in June 2009. Ian Shepherdson, chief economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics, noted that the labor force increased by 1.5 million in the January to March quarter after shrinking by 500,000 last year. Americans worked an average of 34.5 hours last month, up from 34.3 in February, and was held back by severe weather. The increase, though small, means many Americans received larger weekly paychecks. Yet average hourly pay slipped a penny to $24.30 after a big 10-cent gain in February. That's a disappointment for many economists, who thought February's sharp increase might mark the start of a new trend. Average hourly wages have risen from 2.1% in the past year. Inflation has risen 1.1% in that time as well. Freezing temperatures and heavy snowstorms this winter closed factories, slowed homes, and kept consumers away from the shopping malls. Hiring averaged 178,000 in the first 3 months of this year, down from 198,000 a month in the final 3 months of 2013. Although saying that consumers were kept away from shopping malls might not be true. Speaking as somebody who worked in a shopping mall all winter, in the coldest winter that Michigan has ever had, I can guarantee that we definitely still had shoppers, especially when Canada brought all of their hockey fans to Ann Arbor for a game and they all came into our store, which was actually really a cool experience. Anyways, still, many economists expect hiring to average about 200,000 jobs a month for the rest of the year. Hiring at that pace should lower the unemployment rate and support steady growth. Other recent economic data suggests that the economy is picking up from the winter freeze. Auto sales jumped 6% last month to 1.5 million, the most since November. That was a sign that Americans remain willing to spend on big purchases. Surveys by the Institute for Supply Management, a group of purchasing managers, showed that both manufacturing and service companies expanded at a fast pace in March. Factories cranked out more goods and received slightly more orders, a good sign for future production. Service companies also received more orders. Home sales and construction, however, have been weak in the recent months. Sales of existing homes have fallen in 6 out of the past 7 months. Cold weather has likely caused some of the decline, but higher mortgage rates, rising prices, and a limited supply of available homes have also held back sales. Many economists think growth slowed to a 1.5% to 2% annual rate in the January to March quarter, down from a 2.6% pace in last year's fourth quarter. Most also forecast that steady hiring and less drag from government spending cuts should lift growth to nearly a 3% annual pace for the rest of the year. This is good news for my generation, who are graduating college and worried about where they will be going next. And this is some positive look on what has been a really dreary outlook for quite a while now on if you will be able to get hired. Strong storms advance on the south and the Midwest. Speaking of the coldest winter in Michigan, storms have struck Texas, St. Louis, and are now moving east. There's also a strong chance of rain in Cleveland, Birmingham, and Atlanta. Powerful storms damaged homes and businesses in Texas and the central United States are moving east this Friday, threatening a wide swath from the Gulf Coast north to the upper Ohio Valley. This is a report from the National Weather Service. The main threat will be thunderstorms with straight-line winds and hail. Heavy rain is possible throughout the area as well as in the northeast. In Birmingham, Alabama, and Jackson, Mississippi, the chance of thunderstorms is 100% before 1 p.m., with storms tapering off the rest of the day. A drenching thunderstorm also was predicted for Cleveland and Cincinnati. In Atlanta, there's a 60% chance of thunderstorms Friday and Friday night. The Weather Service issued a wind advisory for parts of Indiana and a flood warning for central Indiana, with both expected to end Friday night. On Friday morning, no twisters had been spotted in the South and Midwest. In Texas and Missouri on Thursday night, people were cleaning up damage caused by the storms and, in some cases, tornadoes. Although we get earthquakes out here in California, let's be thankful that we are not in the tornado alley. Authorities said a tornado touched down Thursday night in Hopkins County, Texas, which caused serious damage to homes and businesses, such as the Burger Barn restaurant and Joe Bob's gas station. The tornado reportedly touched down near Birthright, just north of Sulphur Springs. The storm also knocked down the local water tower. Can I just imagine how much water comes out of a water tower if it gets knocked down? A tornado was spotted on the ground Thursday night in St. Louis County, Missouri, near Glendale. About an hour earlier, the agency reported damaging twister with quarter-sized hail about 50 miles west near Washington. A tornado was earlier reported in the Osage County community of Rich Fountain. Denton County, Texas, Sheriff's Office spokeswoman Sandy Brackeen said that a tornado touched down south of Crum. Outbuildings and barns, but no homes or commercial properties suffered damage, said County Emergency Services Chief Cody Gonzalez. St. Louis residents awoke Thursday to tornado sirens as a cluster of heavy thunderstorms began moving through. The Weather Service confirmed a tornado touchdown about an hour before sunrise in the St. Louis suburb of University City, gouging a half-mile by 100-yard path. The Weather Service gave the tornado an initial rating of EF1, packing top winds of 112 miles per hour. The twister knocked down trees and ripped up a gas main in University City, but there were no injuries. University City Mayor Shelley Welsh reported via Twitter, St. Louis County officials said about 100 homes had been damaged. The National Storm Prediction Center noted reports of large hail falling Thursday in parts of Missouri, Arkansas, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. Renato Reyes Gomez sent CNN iReport a picture of golf ball-sized hail in Denton, Texas, saying he could not recall anything ever this big. Seems as though everywhere this year is having some difficult weather. As previously mentioned on the show, I went down to Arizona with a teammate for spring break, and they are having regular weather. We had beautiful weather the whole week we were here, or there, sorry. It was 80 degrees, sunny, beautiful out. But they were telling us about how it had been such a strange winter for them, and the same was in Michigan, as I just mentioned. Now, the largest hail that some people can ever remember, it makes you think, what is going on with the weather, and how can we help? We're going to go to another song break, and here is Of Time and Three Rivers by Time for Three on the album Three Fervent Travelers.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The More You Know. I'm Pickles, and this is radio.dominican.edu. You are listening to Penguin Radio. We've just talked about some world news and national news, and now let's talk about some sports. The Seahawks are announcing Pete Carroll's extension on Friday, so today. The Seahawks' Super Bowl victory is about to pay off financially for coach Pete Carroll. The team has scheduled a 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time press conference on Friday to announce an extension for Carroll. This is according to NFL.com. If Carroll gets a big raise, he could become the highest-paid coach in the NFL. The Seahawks coach signed a 5-year, $35 million deal in 2010 that pays him $7 million annually. That number puts him in the upper echelon of NFL coaching salaries, but not at the top. Saints coach Sean Payton, Chiefs coach Andy Reid, and Patriots coach Bill Belichick are all believed to be making more than Carroll, according to Forbes.com. Payton is pulling in $8 million annually, while Belichick and Reid are both making about $7.5 million per year. The Seahawks have the richest owner in the NFL, in Paul Allen, so it's not crazy to think Allen would be Carroll the league's highest paid coach. With a net worth of about $15.8 billion, Allen is worth more than the next three richest owners combined. Of course, Carroll will have earned any raise he gets. The 62-year-old has molded the Seahawks into his image of the perfect football team. In four seasons under Carroll, the Seahawks have made the playoffs three times, including last season when they beat the Broncos 43-8 in the Super Bowl. Since 2010, Seattle is 38-26. Has a 38-26 record under Carroll. If Carroll does become the highest paid coach in the NFL, that could make something that makes the already interesting negotiations between Jim Harbaugh and the 49ers even more interesting. Now, another news about Washington, as most people know, I would hope everyone knows, April Fool's Day was this past Tuesday. And I personally had a blast, but I'll get to that later. First, here is a clip from Husky football about Husky football and a practical joke that their coach played on them on April 1st.
And we're not going to release these for 2 weeks, but right before spring game. Now, history of your program and what you're all about. And so when they were asking us, we came up with just a couple things. One, old school, blue collar, hardworking. They take these words, they try to turn them into a uniform concept. And so, you know, sometimes they can be out there a little bit, but if you see these things, you'll be okay. So fellas, come on in. Come on in.
Come on in.
Come on in.
This is their coach releasing their new uniforms to the team before they get released to the public.
Come on in. Come on in. Alright.
The uniforms have...
Alright, now hold on. So... we really want to emphasize the university. So you took the W off, the Husky now. This is the original Husky. So if you can see this, I know it looks a little bit funny, but this is the original Husky.
They say dogs across the butt, and they have their symbol, the W, right on the frontal part of the pants, right in the middle.
So the reason that we were named the Huskies.
Right on the crotch.
19-whatever. They found a homeless dog walking through the campus. And this is the original sketch. I know he looks a little goofy, but that's what he did look like back in the 1900s. So they really want to emphasize the dogs. They really want to emphasize the dove. And so, I got you. Well, hang on. When we first saw and took them in, we might not wear them every game, but if you know, we still got the number on the back big, small in front. The thing about this is, you always got to focus on, you know, one of the things you told.
They also have the big UWW large on the front and their number small on the front and then still large on the back.
Book two is about be here now. We're always going to be here now. We're going to focus on, forget about the present, forget about the past, be here now. Right? So what is now? It's April Fools!
Thank God! That's terrible!
So I hope everybody had as great of an April Fool's as I did. I live in the dorms here at Dominican, and our hall got quite into it. I'm not going to say that we started it, but we might have started it. To begin with, my roommate, who was on our show, Madeline Paulson, we pranked our friend, who was also on my show recently, Lee LeVere. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of the cups prank. So you fill a room or a hallway or whatever. It's mostly done as seniors by like high school senior pranks. So we filled his room up with little cups and they all had a little bit of water in them. So it's really difficult to walk through. Just a hassle to clean up. So we got him with that. And then we also replaced his soap with lubricating jelly and put Icy Hot on his toilet. And we got a bunch of pads and wrote Lee on his door with pads, as in like tampon pads, and put a heart there. So little did we know though, while we were off doing that, we had some friends distracting him. Those friends also told him what we were doing. So when we came back down to our room thinking we were super sneaky, we came back to our room, which had been teepeed, our bras were hanging from the ceiling, there were cotton balls on the ceiling. So we all got a good laugh out of that, and then while they went up to go look and see what we'd done to Lee's room, we took all the teepee that they'd thrown around our room and ran up to the other room and ripped that up and threw it around their room, so got them back that way. And then, so that was just, we all had a good time, it was a good laugh. And then later that day, because you know we can't lose the prank wars, so while Lee was at class, Maddie and I, and then the other two who were helping out with Lee pranking our room, we all took Lee's furniture and put it down in the Pennantfort lounge. So when he got back from class, his desk, his bed, everything was down in the lounge, and then we of course had set out the cups again. So it was a pretty fun day, and everyone took the jokes well, and there were no hard feelings at the end of the day. And it was fun to just goof off and kind of just playing tricks. It's a good time. Some other pranks that we had thought about doing but either didn't have the money or the ways to pull them off. You can always get a box of donuts and put mayo in them, fill them with mayo instead of custard, and that'll be a nasty surprise when someone bites into it. You can also take the mayo out of a mayo jar and put vanilla pudding in and then walk around eating it just to gross people out. And of course there's the Diet Coke. You can empty a Diet Coke and then put in some soy sauce and Sprite, and it'll look just like Diet Coke. It'll make the same like opening bottle cap noise when you open it, but of course it will taste terrible. That's something fun to do. And then there's always the good old get the car and put cotton balls on the car or what have you. So now to continue on with some sports news. Well, not really sports news, but here are the 10 best sports movies on Netflix. This is the ones you can watch instantly, of course. So number 10, Goon. A loser with a heart of gold, Goon follows Doug as he moves from bouncer to hockey enforcer. In the shadow of his successful brother, he proves himself to his family and friends through comedic violence. As fun as it is funny, Goon shouldn't be taken too seriously, but definitely deserves a spot on any sports movie list. Number 9, Days of Thunder. Before Tom Cruise went crazy, he had one heck of a streak in some great movies. A young racer set on making a name for himself ends up in a tragic wreck, having to redeem himself by getting over his new fears. The final race is a great scene in sports cinema, a fantastic climax to the end of the movie. Number 8, Pool Hall Junkies. Junkies, that is, not drunkies. Like Christopher Walken, how about cheesy acting, a plotline similar to Rounders, then bam! Do we have the movie for you? Pool Hall Junkies never really takes itself that seriously, but is always enjoyable. It certainly made us want to find the nearest dive bar and play some pool. Number 7, the always good, always funny, classic Happy Gilmore. You've probably already seen Happy Gilmore, and if you're anything like us, you've probably seen it on Netflix and wondered, has Happy Gilmore stood the test of time? And the answer is yes. For all the crud that Adam Sandler takes these days, there was no actor even close to his level of humor in the mid-90s. And for all the crud that Adam Sandler still takes, you know, he still is a great actor. I see no problem. People talk about getting typecast, but if you're good at what you do, then do it. Number 6, Never Back Down. This used to be one of my favorite movies. Me and my friends would watch it all the time, and partially because the guys in it are so hot. Okay, so please go and watch this movie, and then you can go back to this list, which is, by the way, from thebestofnetflix.com. You can find more top 10 movies lists for action comedy on this site. Never Back Down will be the type of movie where you want to hate it, but you're willing to bet you'll actually really like it by the end of the movie. It's kind of cheesy, kind of just horrible, but then it's kind of really good. Next is K2. This is number 5. This movie makes the list for a different reason than all the others. It's actually a terrible film, but it's so terrible that it's an enjoyable flick. Bad acting, terrible music, ridiculous plot, but enjoy it for what it is and laugh the whole time, just as the director had hoped. As a side note on terrible movies that you can laugh at the whole time, check out The Purge. It's a horrible, scary movie, but you'll be so mad at how stupid the people in the scary movie are that you'll just end up yelling at them and laughing the whole time. And still get a little frightened, even though you don't want to, if you're like me. Number 4 is Breaking Away. Somewhere between Growing Up and Settling Down, the ultimate coming-of-age movie. Breaking Away should be a required movie for all adolescents. A movie as much about bike racing as it is about growing up. Number 3 is Brian's Song. It's a great movie of two friends who started competing with one another for a spot on the football team. Through this, they end up bonding and becoming best friends, only strengthened by eventual hardship. Based on a true story, it's a wonderful story of two best friends. Number 2 on our list is Warrior. You might have seen Warrior atop our list of best action movies on Netflix. This is if you had gone to thebestofnetflix.com. But it deserves a definite spot on both of the lists. This movie seemingly flew under the radar, but ask anyone who has seen it, even the most manliest men, and we have a hard time believing they weren't in tears by the end of this movie. The two estranged brothers end up fighting in the same tournament, but throughout the whole movie, their relationship painfully struggles, and it's an absolute must-watch. And number 1 on the top 10 best sports movies on instant Netflix is Raging Bull. Nominated for 8 Academy Awards, Raging Bull is a classic depiction of Italian-American boxer Jake LaMotta in this historical biopic. Directed by Martin Scorsese and brilliantly acted by Robert De Niro, this is a must-watch for both sports fans and cinephiles alike, a definite classic. And mind you, this is just the top 10 movies on Netflix. This isn't overall, because obviously there are some great sports films that were left out of that. So now, let's get on to some funny news and end your Friday, The More You Know show, and have you go off and have a great weekend. First, Clinton wouldn't be surprised by an alien visit. Former President Bill Clinton said he wouldn't be surprised if Earth was eventually visited by aliens, which, let's be honest, it's really, really silly to think that in the whole entirety of this universe, and all the galaxies and the huge expanse of nothingness that nobody can ever fathom. Well, I can't. I don't know if you can. It would be silly to think that we are the only living life forms in the whole entire universe. I don't know, he said when quizzed on the subject by talk show host Jimmy Kimmel on Wednesday. But if we were visited someday, I wouldn't be surprised. I just hope that it's not like Independence Day. He is referring to the movie Independence Day, of course, where the aliens come and take over. He added, we know now we live in an ever-expanding universe, but we know there are billions of stars and planets out there, and the universe is just getting bigger. Clinton also explained that he had reviewed the subject during his time in the White House and found no evidence of alien life, so that's what he was doing while he was in the White House. He says, we know from our fancy telescopes that just in the last 2 years, more than 20 planets have been identified outside our solar system that seemed to be far enough from their suns and dense enough that they might be able to support some form of life. So it makes an increasingly less likely that we're alone. I think it would be kind of cool if aliens came, but then it's also kind of scary because it's like, how did they get here that we don't know? So even if there was somebody just exploring, as we do, through space, trying to find what's out there, it'd be freaky to think, how are they so much more advanced than we are? And so I think that is why people get kind of scared of aliens, because they think, you know, they're so much more advanced. And also thinking about what we would do if we came to an alien planet, I think that's where the idea of alien abductions come from, because in the past, when people have come to new countries, as in us, as in white people coming to America, and with the Native Americans here, we were not friendly because we didn't understand their ways, and we thought of them as lesser. Not we, but the past people. So I can see how, given past beliefs of human and past examples of humans coming to a new society and not interacting well, I can see how that could be thought of as how if aliens came here who were obviously more, not obviously, but have more advanced technology, so probably more intelligent than us, then people would assume that we would be attacked or taken or abducted or anything. Next, a boy, anyone but Rob Ford campaign boasts phony candidates. If you haven't heard about this already, this is for a mayor in Canada, and that's one of the three outrageous campaign slogans on signs that popped up all around Toronto on Monday, spoofing the bad behavior of Canada's favorite substance-abusing incumbent mayor, Rob Ford, who, by the way, did cocaine while in office, was he promises to just smoke pot as mayor, not crack. All of these fake ads for mayor candidacy have, of course, underneath them the slogan, anyone's better than Rob Ford. Another poster reads, when I urinate in public, I never get caught on camera. Anyone's better than Rob Ford. And a third zinger, the current mayor threatens to kill people and gets publicly drunk. If elected, I promise I will just get publicly drunk. Anyone's better than Rob Ford. These candidates, who are just actors, aren't running for anything, and the signs aren't just a joke. A grassroots group hopes they will draw attention to various real candidates who want to replace the current mayor and further its goal of anyone but Rob Ford. Christina Robbins, founder of NoFordNation.com, said she partnered with the hip ad agency Rethink to create the 100 signs, which went up at parks all over the city. Again, this is about Toronto. They've already been taken down, she said. Two spokesmen for Ford did not respond to requests for comment. Although Ford has admitted to smoking crack, driving drunk, and urinating in public, he has refused calls to step down, even after being stripped of many of his powers by the city council. Let me just review this. This is the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, who has admitted to smoking crack. That alone. But then not just that, also driving drunk and urinating in public. The mayor of Toronto has smoked crack, drove drunk, and urinated in public. And he is not going to step down. And they're not impeaching him. But he has been stripped by many of his powers by the city council. Just what in the heck? Come on, Canada. Although Ford, instead he announces that in January he is running for re-election. Let's hope he gets it. Robbins, 41, said her problems with Ford predate the infamous video that caught him smoking crack. She founded her group in 2011 when his administration proposed cutting free lunch for poor kids. She said, and then everything really blew up. If you want to check out these, go search... NoFordNation.com, and you can see more about this issue. Although from here, you know, we're far away from Toronto and we don't live in Canada, and it's just a mayor, so it's not a huge deal for us, and we can look at it and think of it as funny, but for the people in Toronto, this is no joking matter. And now a boy digging trout pond finds 1,000-year-old remains. This is from Salt Lake City. A 14-year-old boy digging a trout pond in the back of his father's Salt Lake City home stumbled across a surprise: the remains of an American Indian who lived about 1,000 years ago. Experts from the Utah Department of Heritage and Arts spent Friday removing the remains, which were confirmed by medical examiners as those of a person from a millennium ago. Investigating the site for archaeological clues after ninth grader Ali Ertuk's discovery early in the week. Humans have occupied this valley for up to 10,000 years, said department spokesman Jeffrey Fatah. We do run into situations where progress runs into the ancient past. A forensic anthropologist will analyze the remains to try to learn more, including the person's sex and cultural affiliation. A report will go to the State Division of Indian Affairs, which will try to determine where the remains are linked to current tribes. A tribe may claim the remains and perform interment rites. Another private property in Salt Lake City has occasionally yielded Native American graves. The department typically receives about 6 reports of ancient remains statewide each year. Ertuk said he had been working on the trout pond for a couple of weeks until he discovered what he initially thought was just an animal bone. When I saw it looked like a human skull, then it was definitely a bit creepy, he told KTVX-TV. I really do think there's other bones nearby, and I don't think that it's unlikely or that lucky that I stumbled across this. Fatah urged the public to contact law enforcement authorities if human remains are unearthed so they can be removed professionally and respectfully. Ertuk's father notified Salt Lake City police after his son's discovery. Now, I might be a little bit, superstitious, but if I found remains, I would just bury them back up, just because, you know, removing someone from the grave is just kind of, I don't like the idea of that. And I know that this is for science and they're removing them respectfully and nicely, and hopefully their tribe can do the interment rites as they talked about in this article. But it's just, maybe I've watched too much Family Guy where they find bones in the backyard, or Simpsons or whatever it was, but I don't know. It's kind of creepy. I've watched too many scary movies. Just to finish up, let's get some fun facts for you. It's a little bit of more you know facts before the weekend. If you yelled for 8 years, 7 months, and 6 days, you would have produced enough energy, sound energy that is, to heat one cup of coffee. The strongest muscle in proportion to its size in the human body is the tongue. Every time you lick a stamp, you're consuming 1/10 of a calorie. The human heart creates enough pressure when it pumps out to the body to squirt blood for 30 feet. Banging your head against a wall uses 150 calories an hour. A person cannot taste food unless it is mixed with saliva. For example, if strong-tasting substance like salt is placed on a dry tongue, the taste buds will not be able to taste it. As soon as a drop of saliva is added and the salt is dissolved, however, a definite taste sensation results. This is true for all foods. That's pretty interesting. The average person falls asleep in 7 minutes. Not my roommate, though. She falls asleep in 30 seconds. She is the best sleeper I've ever met and will wake up at the drop of a hat. Your stomach has to produce a new layer of mucus every 2 weeks, otherwise it will digest itself. Ew. And humans are the only primates that don't have pigment in the palms of their hands. 35% of the people who use personal ads for dating are already married. Proof of this comes from 2 Pina Coladas, the song. Go look it up. It's a great song. It's possible to lead a cow upstairs, but not downstairs. I know some people who have done a prank like this for their high school. They've taken a cow upstairs for the senior prank and then left it there. And dogs have 4 toes on their hind feet and 5 on their front feet. An ant can lift 50 times its own weight, pull 30 times its own weight, and always falls over on its right side when intoxicated. I didn't know ants got drunk. And a cockroach will live 9 days without its head before it starves to death. Butterflies taste with their feet. Elephants are the only mammals that can't jump. Starfish don't have brains. And last but not least, polar bears are left-handed. And so that will be all from your left-handed host. This is Pickles, you've been listening to More You Know on radio.dominican.edu. Stay tuned. Next half hour at 12:30, the Penguin Press Pass will be on. Thank you. This is Penguin Radio.